I'm going to turn it over to John Nola to do the introduction.
Good morning. Thank you for coming. And probably during the day, a lot of people coming and going. We anticipate, as you can see, that this is going to be true workshop environment. We're going to have to be flexible to adjust to the WebEx and to accommodating people on the phone and to being flexible here in the room as we work through the day. But appreciate you coming to the third SOCOP workshop. And okay, first of all, I'd like to thank USGS for hosting the meeting and for providing the WebEx and other capabilities that will be here in the room. And also thank Ontolog for providing a dial-in number. And just so you're aware, Ontolog is going to be recording the proceedings this morning, and the audio will be available at some point in the future. I'm not sure exactly what the time frame will be for that, but not too distant future, along with the slides that are used in the presentations today. So all that will be available at the SOCOP workshop, the SOCOP wiki. And if you have questions about that, see Gary, and he can help you. As I said, this is the third annual workshop for SOCOP, and what we wanted to do today is to focus on some of the current future development, implementation, and uses of spatial semantics ontologies, and really try to focus and start to bring our focus onto abilities can be used in meeting organizational mission and program needs. One of the questions that we tried to deal with over time is, what is the value of semantics and ontologies? Because I know a lot of agencies and organizations still, as they try to deal with how they incorporate them into their technology environment, how are they really going to be of value and benefit to them? So hopefully this year we can make some continued progress, how they can use these capabilities in their work activities. SOCOP has been in existence for a couple of years, actually about 4 or 5 years now, and it's totally a member organization. We're not, at this point, sponsored or beholden to any one particular organization, but it's made up of our members, and we invite any of you who have not been participating to participate as we go forward from this point in time. But what we're trying to do is foster increased collaboration, look at ways in which we can participate in and support the use of open standards and help drive towards the place that we all want to be with increased interoperability, and to work with other organizations, OGC, ISO, Insights L1, W3C, any other organizations and agencies that are interested in the use of semantics and ontologies. So our agenda for today, and if you haven't gotten a copy of the agenda and you would like a paper copy, have some here, and let me just pass those around so you can kind of follow where we are as we go through the day. I won't run through the agenda, but just note that we have scheduled a 3 o'clock wrap-up time. Hopefully we can meet that, but we don't have to be out of the room at 3 o'clock. We can stay a little longer than that. So if we have discussions that are of interest to people and want to stay here and kind of keep the discussion going, we can do that for a little while after. And also one of the things that Gary suggested, if people are interested, is maybe just trying to set up a spontaneous happy hour somewhere, in the immediate vicinity after we're done today. Again, totally voluntary and totally what fits in with your particular schedule, whether you have to try to deal with rush hour traffic or catch a flight or anything like that. We do have the afternoon roundtable discussions that we want to have to try to take some topics forward. So far we've got about 4 topics that have been proposed and that we're looking at least right now is the roundtable discussions. One on land use classification harmonization, second one on vocabularies, third one on what do we want to do in 2011 regarding the development, continued progress on a SOCOP demonstration, and then a fourth one looking at standards and a reference framework for semantics and ontologies in the geospatial domain. But that doesn't mean that's the only ones that we necessarily should have, or that we have to have those four. We have the room available for six breakout discussions if we want to do that, so we can come back before we break for lunch and just settle on which discussions we want to have this afternoon. What we're looking at is having two at a time, or about a 45-minute time period for the first round of discussions, and then a second 45-minute time period for the second round of discussions, so we pretty can go to two of them this afternoon. So again, we'll come back to that. And that ends it for the slides that I had for the wrap-up. A couple of logistic announcements. One is cafeteria is here in the building. You don't need an escort to go to it. Go down this hallway that's by the windows. You come to a wall, kind of work your way to the left around the wall. There's a bank of elevators there. Take the elevators down to the basement level and just go, you go that direction after you come out of the elevators and you find the cafeteria. One problem that we do have is the cafeteria closes at 10:30 in preparation for lunch and opens up again at 11. We've scheduled our break from 10:30 to 11. So in that case, if you want coffee or beverage or something like that, there's a snack bar, again, down the same hallway. Just after you get past the bank of windows, there's an earthquake exhibit on the right-hand side, and the snack bar is just beyond that, and that's open until 4 o'clock. Cell phones. As you heard when we got the interference here, cell phones can interfere with the mics in the room. So ask you to turn cell phones and BlackBerries off to try to minimize that disruption. Restrooms are behind the stage here. Ladies' restrooms on this side, go out to the back. Men, this side, and out to the back. And again, you know, since this is a workshop, if you have to take a break during the workshop, feel free to go out. Just be careful as you go out these doors because they can be kind of noisy if you just let them go and just kind of slide them closed as gently as you can. Microphones for the speakers. Ask that you use the podium. And if you stay within, you know, just a couple of feet as I am of the microphone, you should come through okay. If anyone else has comments or questions, we have mics, wireless mics on each side here. And all you need to do is press a button to turn them on. And if we need to, we can have somebody be a runner to take them around to you. But, you know, again, we'll deal with that as we get to those points. Gary, you have any other logistics that you want to make, announcements you want to make?
I'm going to make some announcements and then we can have the introduction. I just wanted to make sure we have control passed. Hopefully the call-in number is working well. I'm not sure how people would be hearing if it wasn't on SOCOP. That information is on a SOCOP.org wiki. We also have a WebEx in case people might have had the call-in number but not have the WebEx number. That meeting number is the following. It's also on the SOCOP wiki, 734-252-876. And that's 734-252-876. The password is USGS, which makes a lot of sense. I'll just repeat the idea of muting and unmuting the phones from the SOCOP, from the Ontolog call-in. People should be muted now. Star 2 does that. Unmuting Star 3, we have unmuted for Amit's presentation. One thing that wasn't mentioned, while we don't have wireless access here for the audience, we do have internet connections, cables outside, we have 10, so that during break time or an emergency, you can go outside and connect to your computer and access the internet and also over lunch. People have questions or comments or problems, they can email me. I will be online. That's gbergcross,
at gmail.com. And in the afternoon, if people are calling into one of the sessions, will be on the Ontolog Network. If people are calling in for the other sessions that we will announce, which ones are which, that will be using the SOCOP number, which again is on the wiki. That call-in number for the afternoon is 866-740-2200, and the password is 9765978 number sign. Okay. Now Lynn will introduce our keynote speaker, and we will pass control over to him. Which one is it? Lynn, do you know which one it is that passes the control over? Say again? Oh, No, it was a command. Oh, share my... Yeah. Yeah. Okay. All right. Not doing it. No, that's webcam. Make presenter. Okay.
Thanks, Gary. I'm Lynn Ursary with the U.S. Geological Survey. First, let me welcome you to the USGS's National Center and to this SOCOP workshop. They've given me the honor of introducing our keynote speaker, who is Professor Amit Sheth. I knew Amit, and we were both professors at the University of Georgia. Dr. Sheth now is a computer scientist at Wright State University in Dayton, Ohio. He is the LexisNexis Ohio Eminent Scholar for Advanced Data Management and Analysis. Prior to the establishment of the NOAA Center, which he founded, he's at Wright State University. He served as director of the Large Scale Distributed Information Systems Laboratory at the University of Georgia. Dr. Sheth's research areas include semantic interoperability, integration, and the semantic web, workflow management and semantic web services, information integration, and I'll mention just one of his awards and accomplishments. He's been elected as an IEEE Fellow for contributions to information integration and workflow management. Dr. Sheth will can give us a presentation on spatial semantics. Amit?
Okay. I hope you can hear me now. And you can see my... title slide. Let's see. I got a bit carried away and ended up putting together quite a few slides. So some slides I will be rather breezing through, but I am quite hopeful that I'll be able to get the main ideas across. So if you really want to interrupt me, you can use the chat. Hopefully I will be able to see that and respond to you. Otherwise, we can, if there is a time, then we can take questions at the end. So let's look at the title or what, that implies in a way what I want to cover. We said I want to focus on spatial semantics for interoperability and analysis, but primarily in the context of Web 3.0. So I'll define what I mean by Web 3.0, at least what it means to me. And when we are building applications in Web 3.0, yes?
Can you move a little bit closer to your phone or speak up a little bit? We're having a little bit of trouble hearing you.
So I am holding the handset in my, next to me. So this is as close as I can. So I don't know what else I can do.
Go ahead.
Do interrupt me if it is just too bad or you can't hear or if you want me to slow down. I'll speak a little louder, but don't know if that will make much difference. As I said, I'm going to take the context of Web 3.0, and in that context, why and where spatial semantics play an important role, and what kind of technologies are coming about where spatial semantics plays a role. Hopefully, you will see that at least my take is somewhat non-traditional. I have a one-slide overview of what my center does, or at least some part of my center does. We are an Ohio Center of Excellence. We have 15 faculty from 4 different colleges, 45-plus PhD students, excellent collaborations with industry and such. And we've been using semantics and studying the role of semantics from low-level infrastructure and system issues to high-level issues about building intelligent applications. So you can see a variety of technologies and the semantics plays a role in our center. And if you go to noesis.org in the projects, you can look up a variety of projects in each of these areas. All right. So let me paint the overall context of Web 3.0. We started out with a web of pages or web of documents, and we went to web of databases, dynamic web pages, and dynamic website. We got into web of resources. We have services that can wrap any data set or any application and make it accessible ubiquitously. Then we got into web of people, user web or web 2.0 and social networking, user created data. And then we now kind of see web as a source of information, knowledge, and more. And we expect web to give answers to our complex questions. Over the period of time, as we have gone, I've seen increasing role of semantics. And you also see the way semantics are used, going from keywords to patterns to objects to events and situations. And eventually, I hope that we'll see technology that will be assimilated in the life and improve our experience. I call that computing for human experience. There is a piece that I had in IEEE Internet Computing that discussed the vision. Now, as just two of the common observations are that we deal with increasing variety or heterogeneity of data. We have data, web of pages, documents, databases, all kind of stuff that I mentioned on the previous slide. Spatial information is a very rapidly increasing set of that. I'll come to that very shortly. And there is exponential growth of each of the kind of data, especially such things as, say, sensor data, as well as social data. So, just an example in mobile data, I pointed out some growth in that data. What happens is that in a large class of intelligent applications that are emerging, what you find is that we utilize large amount of both historical and recent or real data of various types from multiple sources, and a lot of this data has spatial property, that we not only do search for this data, but also analysis of an insight and look for insight from the data. That means we have applications that are more intelligent, we look for in particularly the semantics that are spatial in nature, temporal semantics, thematic or domain specific semantics, and increasingly use background knowledge. In this talk, I will focus on how spatial semantics is a key component in building many Web 3.0 applications. So I start out with a seemingly simple query. What schools in Ohio should now be closed due to inclement weather? And when you start looking at this application and how you might analyze that and how you can get an answer to a user, somebody in the government offices or in, that has to look at this and analyze current situation. You need a lot, you know, you need a lot of things to happen to be able to answer these questions. So, the kind of technologies that may need to be integrated to answer these questions include spatial aggregation, what we call semantic sensor web, automatic machine perception or active machine perception, link sensor data, and analysis of streaming real-time data. And in many of these things, again, you'll see that there will be role of spatial semantics. So with this query as a driving example, I'm going to walk through some of the interesting things that are happening, some of the technologies that are being developed and put together that involve spatial semantics. So let's look at technology number one, spatial aggregation. And this particular technology would allow you to, answer questions or sub-questions associated with the core question, what schools are in Ohio? What weather sensors are near each of the schools? So to be able to answer these questions, you need to use partonomy to aggregate spatial regions. You need to query over spatial what spatial aggregation is that this will support partonomy to query over spatial regions of different levels of granularity. And you may need to sort of combine data at the low level, such as information, related to schools in a district, to higher levels, such as state, that are schools are in a state. So query is looking for what schools are in the state. But the data tells you what are, the school and school districts. And then you have to somehow connect that to the state as a whole. Now, what happens today? Just a very quick state of the art. Clearly, there's a huge availability of spatial information. You can go to Google Map and you can type in schools in Ohio. What will be interesting is that instead of giving you schools in Ohio, it will give you schools near Ohio. And thereby, you'll see that there are schools that are not just limited to, Ohio. May make it, more specific. For example, I say schools in Greene County. You'll see that it's trying to do syntactic match here. So it says, did you mean, Green Street? And so that's where the green is matched there. And then you can become, more specific and actually type in schools in Greene County, Ohio. And it will start, I think giving you better answer. But nevertheless, if you, take this map at the high level of granularity, it will also show you schools that are outside Greene County. And it really doesn't have, the demarcation. It does not understand that it's within that you are interested in schools within Greene County only and not just in the surrounding counties. So this becomes issue, this issue is very relevant in that once again you have spatial data that is becoming more significant day by day, and it's crucial for all multitude of applications, and it is generated by multitude of applications. You have social networks that create spatial data, GPS that gives you that. Military situations create a lot of spatial data. There are location-aware services. There's weather data. All of these have spatial components. And all of these are being put out on the web in very, very large quantity. And this is continuously increasing, as I said. So all these things are coming up. One of the interesting things is that naive or not so naive users, but users that may be distributed all around the world, may contribute to the creation of spatial data. For example, creation of geo names or open street maps and all that. So many, many users come together, bring their pieces of data, put it on the web, but there are then significant challenges in utilizing this data. So what we want is to be able to automatically align what user wants to the spatial information of interest through a bunch of intervening semantic operators. The problem is that existing approaches only analyze spatial information and queries at a lexical and syntactic level. that these mismatches are common as to how a query is expressed versus how information is represented. So when you say find schools in New Jersey, there would be that you may not find answers because it only knows about counties are in state but not schools in state. And then there are a lot of ambiguity with natural language. Schools in Green County, in may not be understood by the system. What needs to be done is that we need to build systems that reduces users' burden for having to know how information of interest is represented and structured to enable access to, by broad population, because people are not going to understand and use a very well-defined query languages for what they want. A researcher or scientist at USGS may be interested in doing so, but many people, a policymaker or decision maker in a state is not going to do that. We need to be able to resolve the mismatches between the query and the data, that we need to be able to resolve ambiguous relationship between entities based on natural language to reduce the amount of wrong information that is retrieved. Today, I'm going to now jump and make a little bit of leap of faith to narrow the scope. I'm going to primarily talk about semantic web data. I'll simply note that the kind of things that I've mentioned, the kind of data that I've mentioned, are all available in very, very large quantity in semantic web format, meaning in RDF, Resource Description Framework. Sparkle is the query language for that. And there are some enhancements to that that support regular expressions along with Sparkle, for example. So our query, schools located in the state of Ohio, in a perfect scenario, you might have schools associated with Ohio. That's wonderful. But in quite likelihood, you are going to have schools, with parent related to county and counties related to Ohio. So you'd have to, deal with information in this form while the query may be in the former form. How would you deal with that? And what would you do? What kind of spatial semantics would you support? So what you do is to define operators to ease writing expressive queries by implicit usage of semantic relations between query terms, and that way take away the burden of expressing, name relations in the query. And my student did, for example, was to borrow heavily upon Vincent's taxonomy of part-whole relations, something that you all will be very familiar with, and embed that into the whole query processing framework, any whole data processing framework. So we developed a rule-based approach to allow applications in different domains with appropriate modifications. I'll show a kind of a snapshot of that. And what we developed was this Spark, partonomical relationship-based query rewriting system. So what it did was to take these meta rules for Vincent's category, for transitivity, for overlap, for spatial inclusion, this kind of stuff. These are all well known to everybody, all of you in working in geospatial data and spatial semantics. But to incorporate that within the system. So what it can do is that for a query of the former kind, schools in state is rewritten automatically behind the scene to schools in county and county in state. And so I won't go into a lot of details and comparisons. These are all in the papers. But here we did a study on comparing Sparkle with PA Sparkle, which supports the regular expressions with this PARQ in terms of ease of writing, expressivity, the number of scenarios it supports, and whether it is schema agnostic. And interesting thing was we evaluated, and the fact that we evaluated is not important to this audience, but what is important is the kind of queries we realize. National Geographic B or British Administration's geography related queries, these are all very broad-based, end-user-centric applications involving spatial semantics. And what we showed was that we could build effectively queries that are involved in such broad exercises into the precise queries that we map against data at different levels of granularity. And we use sort of human respondents unfamiliar with the ontology to develop the queries and just see the sample queries that could be expressed here. Since I have limited time, I can't go into a lot of details here, but you can see the queries are pretty interesting, pretty natural, pretty complex. In which English county, also known as the Jurassic Coast, because of many fossils we found there, will you find at the village of Beer Hackett? Right? So these kind of queries are something that end user may be interested in, and how can you use spatial semantics to more to represent these queries and against existing data sets, naturally existing data sets. And there were, you know, evaluations. I don't want to discuss those things in detail. But, you know, it showed that you can do fairly well once you kind of embed additional semantics in your query processing systems. And so the conclusion is that query engines today expect users to know data set structure and pose well from queries. And that is something very hard for users to do. So we need to be able to exploit semantic relations between concepts, and we need to be able to provide system with behind-the-scene rewrite of queries to remove the burden of knowing the structure of the data. The second technology is semantic sensor web technology. That we have, you know, starting with our original query about inclement weather and school closing in Ohio. Here are other sub-queries that you have to ask. What is inclement weather? What sensors in the OHA are capable of detecting inclement weather, or weather for that matter? What are the sensors near the school? What observations these sensors are generating now? And, are these observations providing evidence for inclement weather? So this leads to something very interesting. And this is something that I increasingly recognize, that you need to be able to, you know, in doing this kind of query processing, you need quite a bit of machinery, meaning it is not possible to use a unimodal, singular, clean solution just by using, say, spatial ontology or such. In this case, if you look at it, you need to be able to model sensors. For example, there is sensor observation ontology that has been developed in worldwide web consortiums, incubator in semantic sensor networking. I am co-chairing that group. There is spatial ontology and the temporal ontologies. There is a temporal ontology, and there will be a specific domain ontology. In this case, weather ontology. In other cases, you may have water ontology and so on and so forth. And you need to be able to generate abstractions that matter to human. So what matters to human is inclement weather. Human is that end user is hardly interested in the temperature being 32.1 degree, right? That doesn't matter to that. That what matters to the human is something like, what is an inclement weather? We're interested in whether there's a blizzard. We're not interested in a very specific precipitation and wind speed and visibility kind of data. So that is a problem. For that, the base is built by semantic sensor web work. You can Google semantic sensor web and come to a host of work in this area. But the idea is that you want to link the physical space with the information space. And you want to, you know, have sensor that observes environment and things like that. And you get the data. And from that, you need to get the perceptions that matter to human that give you situational awareness. And you have sensors now that are ubiquitous. There are 40 plus billion mobile sensors. Unfortunately, much state-of-the-art technology is tailpipe that allow you to get access to a single sensor at a time. But we want to make this sensor data free, but with the freedom comes responsibility, and that you want to discover. One of the things you need to do is with that freedom, how to discover and access and search the data. So OGC has built this semantic sensor web enablement framework. I believe all of you would be familiar with that. then you need to be able to integrate the data together. When it comes to data from different sources, you have a syntactic level solutions using XML that SWE supports, and semantic models OWL and RDF level that WCC's semantic sensor networking incubator supports. So XG deliverables are ontology for semantically describing sensors and illustrate relationship between OGC sensor web enablement language standards and the high level ontologies. And the next thing is to convert these numbers and observations that sensors have into symbols that are perceptions that that humans are interested in. There is an overall architecture of the system that we have that allows you to take from data all the way to be able to build interesting applications. I won't again discuss this in detail, but let me show you a very, very quick demo of this. Here is a little demo this, which is available on the web, and I'm going to only show you a very salient part of it. Here the data comes from 20,000 plus weather sensors from Mesoverse network, and the semantic sensor, web-enabled sensor observation services provides the data, which automatically takes all the sensor data into and converts that into RDF, and tags it with regards to a variety of ontologies, spatial, temporal, and thematic, meaning domain-specific ontologies. You have phenomena of where these are the kind of data, dew point or wind gust, that is what sensors record. But on the top of it, you have features. For example, freezing rain or blizzard. Now, these involve reasoning on the top of low-level features. This involves a blizzard involves a set of rules over visibility and wind speed and precipitation. And these are done automatically. These are specified as rules or ontologies. There is issues about trust and belief. I won't go into that. Here you are choosing some, you enter in blizzard, and on certain date, or in some geographical region, and then the system will come back with saying, you can see these two places on that particular date in particular region of interest, we found that there was blizzard, and then you can look up the specific sensor information, specific data came, and what data supported this particular conclusion. And then the next query is about freezing rain. In this case, you have a lot more results, and the same thing happens, goes on. So let me go back to the presentation again. So this gives you power of semantic sensor web. And remember that here, again, as part of the whole ecosystem of semantic computation, spatial semantics is one of the important things. The third one is active machine perception. Are these observations provide evidence for inclement weather, right? So we talk about example of blizzard. Here in our case, we have example of inclement weather. So the point here is to go from low-level observation to high-level abstractions that human is interested in. So perception is an active cyclic process of explaining observations by actively seeking or focusing on additional information. This is what we call active perception. So awareness of the situation involves that on the physical world you have sensors and we observe, and then again you have a physical world, things like an object that we perceive in symbolic form, and that is how we connect real world with the web. And in the formal theory of perceiving perception, we have specification, implementation, evaluation, and there is a paper on that. What we are talking about here is abstractions that are capable of representing observations and perceptions generated by either people or machines. So what you need here is to connect observation to quality. This is formally described in sensor or observation ontology. Then you have, perceiver that perceives entity. This is formally described in a perception ontology. Again, I wish I had time. I can describe in more detail what this perception ontology is and how does it work. And then you have background knowledge. that indeed, you know, this apple has a quality which is redness, or apples can be red, and that is described in a domain ontology. The perception cycle is about not just, you know, typically you have observation that is observed by something and that receives, that makes a perception. But the active perception or perception cycles is one that is a that's a feedback loop which says, okay, now say it sends a focus to observer and says, give me more information so that I can actively reach a particular conclusion, particular perception. And they, so the cyclic aspects of it is the perception cycle, which requires this entire, you know, cycle of observation, observation quality, and so on and so forth. There is a theoretical description of this. I won't go into that. There is an implementation that links, and there is an ecosystem of this implementation. Again, I won't describe in detail, but that involves use of this whole variety of ontologies. Here, by the way, you can see background knowledge. In this case, this is the weather ontology. And this shows some evaluation that shows how you can apply a variety of techniques that can optimize the way the observations are obtained so that you don't have to, you can reduce the number of observations to be processed to reach a high-level perception or conclusion that indeed there is inclement weather. So let me show you again a very small snapshot of a demo, and you may want to look at it in you know, more detail. So in this particular demo, what you see is that there is basically weather data coming from a whole variety of this sensor data. And you see different colors on the left bottom, rain shower, rainstorm, flurry, and blizzard. These are the perceptions. And the high, the bars that you see is a trust measure. Because my talk today does not focus on trust, so I won't discuss the trust aspect of it. But you can see here the perception being painted that as we process the data, you see that at you know the bar is at the geolocation where there is a sensor pod, and it shows you a variety of then perceptions that are being observed at different geolocations, and so you kind of get an idea of what happens there. Again, jumping back to the presentation, the next technology of interest is link sensor data. There is a big, big thing that has happened in last year or two, and this is called Link Open Data, LOD. And a lot of people are essentially taking their higher quality data, and sometimes not so high quality data, but usually high quality data, and putting up on the web for public to use, data.gov. 6 to 8 billion reports were recently put there. We recently took about nearly 2 billion of sensor data observations and put it on the Link Open Data. And these become then available for access. And the important thing about link sensor data or link open data is the link aspect of it. So not only that you put the data up on the web that you can access in you know common format, but you link each with each other. And here are some of the questions: what schools are in Ohio? What necessitates a policy issue, what necessitates school closing, what sensors can, detect weather and inclement weather, so on and so forth, can be obtained using Link Open Data. So, in our case, Link Sensor Data, we took description of 20,000 weather sensors, and we put also observations, 1.7 billion triples, up there for 7 major storms in the U.S. that occurred over a period of time. And that became part of this Link Open Data ecosystem. So you have data of all these different kinds, and they become part of this Link Sensor data set, goes on the web. For example, this here you see Link Sensor data. This is contributed by our center, Noesis, which is put up there. And that is linked to the GeoNames data, right? So it gets more spatial specificity and usage. So GeoName's data set is linked, and so linked data set located near GeoName, made publicly available, things of that nature. This is just a, this shows you some part of the data set that we made available. You can see a variety of hurricanes and blizzard for which we took the data and made it available, you know, put it up publicly up there. And then it has become queryable. So what you see here is, for example, the observation data, example 70 degree to 60 degree Fahrenheit, measured by thermometer and sensor knowledge base, the kind of sensors that are there, that has a location near Dayton Airport. So there are all these 230,000 plus locations in GeoNames and so on and so forth. There are a lot of active data, there's a lot of static data, they all get linked together. So in the link sensor data, one of the applications we have in the semantic sensor web that utilizes link sensor data, you can search, start saying, start typing the, you know, query, Dayton, and you can find the sensor in the near Dayton. You choose the sensor, it shows you on the map, here's the sensor. You can look up the latest, you know, what are this, sensor, weather sensor ID, and by a click you can look at the latest observation. At that, here is a, map on which it is showing that particular sensor, and here is where it has a, you can click there further to look at very latest observation. So I won't, again, in interest of time, show you details of it, but let's see if I can once again give you a glimpse of this thing in this application. Just to show you here, I'm just doing, walking through this thing. So you can see this is the, specific data that comes from the sensor. And you can do this on the fly, on dynamically. You can do this, and there is a lot of other stuff that are there in terms of technology that I won't go into right now. Now, in the interest of time, analysis of streaming real-time data. What observations are these sensors generating now? I want to make decisions about closing the schools based on information that is near real-time or real-time. So here we have to convert raw data into semantically annotated data in real-time and analyze of this data to generate abstraction in real time. So you have host of real time data, real time streaming sensor data. You apply background knowledge and do semantic analysis to detect events, and you make it possible to search for or query events from the link open data. So in the link open data, I can go to GeoNames. And then, while link data is mostly static, there is huge amount of streaming data that is out there. And what we can do is that we can, map this huge amount of sensor data into abstractions over this data in the events that are connected to, link open data. So what we can do is to start with the raw generated data. Summary of phenomena, into data, and then convert raw sensor data into ONM, which is a language according to SWE, and then that map that into RDF. Again, so remember we are seeing the domain, using domain ontology and other ontologies in the process, and then we use these ontologies to detect events. So then instead of having the raw data, we can have event streams. And this event stream is associated with points with the elements in the link open data. So I can say I can associate event stream with a geo name. Then I can say, tell me the events that are occurring near this location. These kind of things are already emerging. And then you can answer this challenging query: what schools in Ohio should now be closed due to inclement weather? So this needs to be divided into sub-queries that can be answered using the previous technology. So to wrap it up, schools, what schools are in Ohio? We use spatial aggregation. We use paternal spatial relationship and ask those questions that you see there. Then we use geonames.org containing this paternal spatial relationship. spatial aggregation executes the patternological inference to convert general query into sub-queries that can be answered. Then what is inclement weather? This requires domain ontology that describes characteristics of inclement weather. So I see weather, a road, freezing temperature and precipitation, rain and snow. This uses semantic sensor web technology. What inclement weather necessitates school closing? This requires policy information. This may be available from data.gov. What sensors in Ohio are capable of detecting inclement weather? This requires ontological descriptions of sensors and weather to match sensor capability with weather characteristics. And then you have linked sensor data, that is this, you know, so in this case we use that kind of information from LOD. So you combine semantic sensor web and link open data for this, or link sensor data for this, which is a component of link open data. Then sensors, what sensors are near schools in Ohio? You do spatial analysis to match locations to sensor locations that are nearby. And sensor description are linked to link sensor data. Then you say what observations are these sensors generating now, and you start talking about streaming sensor data, and you need to semantically annotate raw sensor observations and analyze them to detect events. So there's real-time event analysis on the streaming data that is being done. We have one of the projects, and there are others who work on this. And then, are these observations providing evidence of inclemental weather? Now you start getting the semantic sensor web into perceptions and high level of abstractions, that humans are interested in, and so you used to work in active perception. And that brings together a whole variety of things that we put it here. These are the slides, and you can get to the papers and briefings and all that in much more detail than demos from here. I kind of end because I had a 45-minute limit. I saw a message by somebody about something about full screen. I had used full screen all the way through, so I hope that you were able to see it that way. Let me go to WebEx here and see if there are anything else here or any questions.
Thank you, Amit. I think we're going to have a little bit of time for a question or two. Anyone have questions for Professor Schett?
Amit, this is Gary. I have a very quick question. You mentioned some interesting things in passing about your perception observation ontology as well as background knowledge. I'm wondering, from the community's point of view, are those publicly available? And can you, if so, can you send a link so that we can paste that, post that to people?
Yes, it is publicly available.
I'm having a little trouble hearing you, if you could step a little closer.
Yes, it is publicly available. In the perception part, there is a mention of this paper here, Ontology of Perception. So I believe if you just Google Ontology of Perception, you should be able to get the answer to this question, this thing. But there is a link from my references at the end to that work.
Is that in OWL, represented in OWL, and if so, could it be stored in a repository for general use?
Yes, it is, yes. It is available in OWL, and it is available for general use.
Thanks, Amit. Any other questions? Thank you very much, Amit. We appreciate the talk.
Thank you.
Okay, while Gary's changing the presentation back to the room, Dr. Schett mentioned standards and kind of a framework for starting to move towards interoperability, making these different technologies, five different technologies that he talked about and other spatial technologies work together. So that's the focus of our next series of presentations. What we wanted to do is to kind of tag team the next half hour to 45 minutes, and we have Laura Reese, Dr. Reese from TASC, Josh Lieberman from Traverse Technologies, Dave Colas from DBN Raytheon, and Luis Bermudez from the Open Geospatial Consortium. And Baldu has just asked each of those four in the order that, I think that's the right order, that I just went through them to come up, won't do any other introductions in between, run through your presentation, maybe just take a question or two if they're available. And what we're going to do is cover standards and activities that are taking place within the standards community that kind of set the framework for moving into greater interoperability, starting from the international to the OGC national level. So as soon as Gary's got your presentation, Laura, we'll let you go.
Having the same trouble as I did last time. Doesn't give me an. I'm looking at my name. Doesn't give me an option to do more than raise my hand. I don't quite. It doesn't seem to show me the same option I had before. Maybe. I hope I should be able to take it back. You know. This stuff here, the green thing. Yeah, I tried that. The return didn't do anything. That toggled to tip. Participants off.
It may have to pass it back to you.
He may have to pass it back?
Yeah.
If you're still online, can you ask the control? All right. Yes, I'll do it. I think we're back. Okay. By the way, there's water and some snacks outside by the internet cable. Okay.
Boy, Dr. Sheffield's a hard act to follow, but we're going to do our best in this tag team that John described. My name is Laura Reese. I am with TASC, and we do work in ontologies, a lot of spatial work, and especially a lot of standards work at the international and national level. So that's why I'm here to just give you a brief overview on what kinds of things are going on that you might want to be interested in. Where do I have to point this? Okay. I'd like to start this talk about the standards overview, and Dr. Seth gave an especially good intro to that. The explosion of the special spatial information that we're going through, it would be really easy to have a free-for-all and how to deal with all of this information. And a quote from Lewis Carroll, if you don't know where you're going, any road will take you there. I think it's especially appropriate. We have our little friend here who's going to reappear on some slides a little bit later. Thanks. So one of my goals for this part of the talk, and I am going to make it brief, there are 20 slides here. For those of you online, don't panic. I'm not going to really take you through 20 slides. I provided a lot of extra information for those of you for now and for later to stimulate some, provide some food for thought and stimulate some discussion in some of the groups this afternoon, if that so happens. So I'm going to talk about four specific groups that I'm personally familiar with. This is not by any means a completely comprehensive review of activities in spatial ontologies at the national or international level. In my part, some of these will be covered later in the day. They'll be covered later in this session by Josh and Luis and some of the other presenters. But the structure that we are going to be talking about, I'm mainly familiar with the ISO, the International Organization for Standardization, the ISO-IEC partnership, International Electrotechnical Commission has a partnership with ISO where they have a joint technical committee on information technology, and that's where some of the standing committees that I'm going to be talking about with you really briefly are positioned. There's OGC that somebody else will be talking about. There is W3C, there is OASIS, there's OMG, all of which really deserve to be mentioned in this, but, you know, 10 minutes is 10 minutes. So we're going to keep that restricted today and then maybe cover those at another time. So what does ISO have? Let's take ISO first because that's what most people are familiar with. ISO has, of course, TC211, which is Geomatics or Geospatial Information Systems. A lot of the people who are involved in this are winging their way as we speak to Canberra, which is where the next meeting of TC211 is happening and where they will be talking about some of the things that I'm going to bring up later. There is also TC37, a technical committee on terminology. This has several different working groups, several different subcommittees, and lots of working groups. I'll have a quick mention of those later. Then the partnership between ISO and IEC has the Joint Technical Committee, as I mentioned, the two standing committees, although there are many that have some pertinent activities, the two that I'm personally familiar with and have information to share with you on our SC32, which is the Standing Committee on Data Management and Interchange, and the recently stood up SC38, which is on distributed computing platforms and applications. I don't have the full name on there, that has three subgroups, web services, cloud computing, and service-oriented architecture. Okay, let's start with TC211, with which most of you are familiar. It's about digital geographic information, how to use it, how to represent it, how to store it, all the different parameters that you can think of. In the context of ontologies, I'm going to skip through a variety of these. There's some concerns that TC211 has that are addressed in that. But the current project that's most important is 19150, which is a project on geospatial ontologies. I just spoke with editor John Brodeur this morning. This was a recent resolution in TC211 to formulate this project. He submitted a proposal for it. Just recently, this summer, two new work items have been proposed to come out of that, so there's going to be a 19150 part one and part two. The first one will be a framework for building these semantics for geospatial information systems, and part two will be rules for converting the plethora of UML models that TC211 participates and believes very heavily in UML models of all of its standards, how to convert those to the application schemas that they also have built into OWL2 for use by the semantic community. Again, there are issues and other items that I'll leave you to read that we can talk about at other times. There are a lot of other standards that TC211 has derived that have application to semantics and to ontology. So there's just a brief description of or mention of those here, the feature cataloging, feature data dictionaries, conceptual schemas, metadata, a variety of them that I've got listed there for your consumption. Okay, I mentioned TC37 terminologies. This is their infrastructure of, you know, they have a fairly well-developed group. They've been in existence for a long time. One of them that has just been stood up, I believe, is specifically on ontologies. Let me get the full name of it here, because this is an eye chart. I'm sorry for that. Ontologies, Linguistic, Terminological, and Knowledge Organization Aspects. Okay, that's going to be an overall approach. It's not specifically spatial. So why am I talking just about not just about spatial ontologies, because even though our content is mostly spatial, it's everything has a where to it. Everything has a spatial aspect to it. So it's imperative that we keep track of where a lot of these other methodological standards are going, and that we know that when we get there, as our friend in the Lewis Carroll quote, that we know when we get there, we'll be able to talk to each other, and that we will, in fact, arrive at the same place. Okay. The ISO-IEC group is heavily involved in this kind of work as well, especially in an expanded perspective with respect to data management. The structure of it's briefly done here. SC32 is data management and interchange. There are four working groups. The metadata one is the one that I'm particularly familiar with. Whoops, went backwards. Here we go. SQL is being written in the database languages group, and the SQL multimedia has a spatial aspect to it as well. They're writing a spatial SQL section. Those working groups are all shows along here, and these are the other subcommittees, SC38. The other one I'm going to talk about is right there. Let me flash through these. There's a scope statement. It's about data management within and among distributed information systems environments. Data management is going to involve semantics to promote harmonization and across sector-specific areas, which is another reason that I'm bringing these standards up. The standards that I've got listed here, 24707, some of you are probably all familiar with, already familiar with. It's the common logic standard that was derived. The participants were Pat Hayes, John Soa, some of the ones from this group, Nancy Lawler, Elisa Kendall from Sandpiper Software. This is a common logic standard for representation of semantic information. 19763 parts, this is actually now 1 to 11. I had updated this since I got back from the most recent meeting in California. Ontologies have metadata too. And ontologies, as we know, we have an open ontology repository. So there's a meta model for registering these ontologies, whether you do it in the open ontology registry or in your own ontology registry. We have to be able to find these ontologies, discover them, to be able to use them. And, of course, 11179, metadata registries. This, because ontology registries are really another kind of metadata registry or vice versa. These two standards are converging, 19763 and 11179. I'll also mention that the 24707 common logic standard is coming up for review and does need some improvement, some amelioration. So if anybody has concerns and interest in that area, please see me about getting involved with that. The last one, SC38, scope statement, has those three things that I mentioned. The terms of reference for the study group on cloud computing: to provide a taxonomy, terminology, and value proposition for cloud computing, a place that we're all heading. Semantics are going to be, as we know, a big part of that. That's another study group that's recently been stood up. But one of their main aims is to use already existing standards, which is another reason I'm hoping to flesh out this brief a little bit more, a lot more actually, to give them more input about standards that already exist. We don't have the budgets. We don't have the people to reinvent the wheel. If a lot of these things are already in process, make each other aware of them. If you see big holes in things that I haven't covered here, you know, let me know. I'd like to get them included. So our last slide here is the roadmap, the way all of these things are going to take us to the place that we want to go, rather than just any road will take us there. This is a road. We can take lots of different roads, but all of these standards are going to help get us there in one way or another. 19150, the 19763s, 19101 is the reference framework for geospatial. All of these things are going to work together. I'm going to turn it over now to, I think we should hold questions until the end for this. I'm going to turn it over to Josh. You next.
Yeah. Thank you. Thanks, Laura. My name is Josh Lieberman, and what I want to do is turn a little bit from ISO, although there's obviously very close relationships between ISO work and OGC, but look at OGC and specifically look at kind of the basis for semantic specification in OGC. And then Dave Colas and Luis Bermudez will flush that out with actual content. I feel obliged to note, since we're sitting here in the U.S. Geological Survey, that actually I'm a doctor of rocks, but after a series of schist jobs, I now work for Deloitte, and my focus seems to be the spatial characteristics of dirty money, but you never know where you'll end up. So the motivation for this, the first thing to say, because the first question is, how come there isn't any semantics of OGC standards? And the answer is, of course, if there were no semantics, that would be easy. There are semantics. They're very, very rich semantics. There's very rich textual semantics. There's very rich UML semantics. There's a lot of stuff, but not very much that a machine can deal with. And that's really the crux of the matter, is how can we help machines to use OGC standards to be more interoperable rather than fitting the reader of 100-page specifications into that processing chain. So there are two particular motivations for getting on track and trying to bring OGC specifications into this fold. One is that it's the victims of success that we're able to use these encodings and models for geospatial information so widely and get at them so globally that now we have a much larger scale opportunity to misunderstand each other than ever before. So the need for mediation is one of the principal drivers of trying to help machines to understand what we mean with geospatial information, so that semantic mediation between disparate concepts and vocabularies, understanding where it's a difference in concept and where it's a difference in theory, which is another very important aspect of geospatial information that is often misunderstood, and the need for a consistent framework for that, because we can't just dump all of this in logic that's been tried and 179 different possible topological relationships. Later, we realized that standards are necessary. The other thing is the what I call the innovation of spaghetti on the wall, throwing linked data up against the internet and seeing what happens. And this is a very exciting prospect. We really want it to succeed, and we need to look at how OGC and geospatial practitioners can help that to be successful. So, quick history. Semantics have actually had a long history in OGC, back more than 10 years, but as with this success and so on, the activity has really increased, I'd say, in the last 4 years, although I was noting to Dave that scarily, some of my 2006 slides are still pretty relevant, but things are heating up, so it's a good time to look at this. So mediation is a very important part of service-oriented architecture because it addresses, I think, some assumptions of service-oriented architecture, of being able to trade between providers and consumers. What do we assume that has to work for this to be successful, and how can we help it to be successful? And some of these have to do with mediation between concepts, mediation between forms of representation. When we say, is that connected to this, we are often dealing with coordinate information that needs to be translated into logical concepts. We have then the processes, for example, of how do we translate that into queries by doing expansion, and how then do we translate broker between providers and consumers in terms of their respective views and representations of the world so that all of this just works. What we worked on in 2006 and is still true is that the one true ontology has either been discredited or hasn't yet come to pass, as with many fantasies. And so we really have the problem of how do we deal with multiple ontologies, pull the right ones in, maintain their consistency, and be able to work across them. So there is a large, what I would call in many cases, pretty standard challenge of management cooperation and agreement, i.e. specification. And many issues that are both generic to mediation and specific to geospatial information. And I would put these into a couple of categories. Some of them are just, you know, how do you manage agreement on concepts? And then some that are very specific to geospatial. We always have this model of model problems. Geospatial information is not reality. The map is not the terrain. It's already a model. And so we're representing theories, some of which may be quite disparate, about reality and identifying where we have semantic mismatches and where we have actual heterogeneity is a hidden but very real challenge for our progress. Then we have the mechanical, you know, how do we provide query expansion and translation in infrastructure that's available to us? Translated to GIS, we're particularly dealing with right now, is how do we get from one end to the other? How do we get from, you know, you have those needs, I have these resources, how do we connect using a system of systems architecture? This is we're looking at ontologies of information back in the interoperability experiment in 2006, and I was going to, you know, throw this up here to talk about ontologizing, and I realized, shoot, you know, this is linked geodata. And already it's illustrating one of our major challenges in looking at, you know, what does OGC need to focus on? Well, we have a model for discerning each one of these things. It's called the general feature model. It's ensconced both in ISO and in OGC. And it doesn't work for this. Because, for example, you know, we don't discern a navigational aid on its own. You know, if it shows up on a golf course, it's not a navigational aid. The navigational aid is discerned precisely because of the relationships it has, the context in which it exists. And we do not have a general contextual or linked geodata model. So this is quickly throwing out there one of the elements of a reference model for semantic standards at OGC that, you know, is a challenge for us to recognize. It's fine to throw spaghetti up against the wall, but what if you have different kinds of pasta? So we need some ways of specifying and making explicit some of these elements that are going into the ability to publish and work with linked geodata, the general triple model. The problem of, you know, do we need and how do we need to standardize these relationships? Dave will talk about GeoSparkle and some of the relationships that are standardized to make that work, but that's only a beginning. Amit talked a lot about partonomy. You know, we have really no established consensus on the geospatial partonomy that we need for recognizing contextual features. We aren't even agreed on whether partonomy means the same as mereology or different or so on. And that doesn't even get to computability and how do we match service and data. So these are all pieces of what I think it's useful to construct a reference model in order to motivate. So there's a lot of work in individual specifications, but a very important trend at OGC now, which Luis will talk about, is how do we bring these together into a more explicit and efficient model of specification development and maintenance. So the road ahead, we have the work to develop a reference model which has the pieces, the practices, and the roadmap that we need to proceed. And then we have a variety of specific activities. And some of these involve the hopefulness of saying, well, you know, we have semantic content in the specification. Let's blip out an ontology of OMM XML and see what it's good for. And some of it is very specific, semantically motivated specifications such as GeoSparkle. So, and I would say this we can see as far as the next intersection because we will be running into this issue of geospatial theories. Incredibly important for sensors in terms of, you know, what is a sensor's theory of reality? And every time somebody says, well, we've got that solved and I know what that sensor around the world is doing, something comes to trip it up. So we will hopefully get to these first two so that we'll have a framework within which to deal with the third. And then we truly will be able to understand each other across a variety of geospatial divides and make the best use we can of the standards and specifications that build the GeoWeb. So that's it for me. And Dave is going to provide us some real content.
Hi, so I'm Dave Polos, and you'll quickly notice that I'm neither of the people listed on the slide here. So I've borrowed these from a couple of the other, or the chair and the editor of the GeoSparkle working group. I'm the co-chair. And so we're talking today about GeoSparkle, which is a working group within the OGC and hopefully a real solid foothold for building semantic web-related standards within the OGC for the geospatial community. I'm going to put the cart before the horse here a little bit and give you the piece of good news, which is that the work has been progressing very well, and we're hoping to release the candidate standard for public comment within the next few months here. So if you're already, if you're a member of the OGC, you can get a hold of this stuff already. If not, then as this is released in January and February, please take a look and give us comments. The second thing on that slide was a lie, because this isn't the meeting this is referring to. So I'll talk a little bit about the scope of the GeoSparkle specification, and then I'm going to blaze through a bunch of technical details on decisions that were made. And if you have any questions about those, please track me down the rest of the day here and talk to me about it, because I love to get into the nitty-gritty of that stuff. So an overview of GeoSparkle. What we tried not to do is create another query language in the semantic web sense. So there have been a lot of proposals to extend Sparkle in various ways, adding quads, etc. This isn't one of them. What we're really talking about here is a language of terms to use within Sparkle, both predicates and classes that you would use in a query, and also filters that you could use for comparison purposes, etc. And the goal of this is to really provide the most fundamental common piece of ontology vocabulary that one would need in order to use geospatial semantic web data in a triple store, or in something that is at least represented outwardly as a triple store. The overall technical approach has sort of fallen in the middle of the ones that were previously existing, in the sense that there's a lot of information represented in geometry literals, but geometries are also REF entities, and so there's some information that's held there as well. And it allows you to do inference at a somewhat, and reasoning at a somewhat higher level than just filters comparing geometry literals. Another big driving reason for doing this is what we'd like to be able to provide triple stores that can do indexing and spatial comparisons in a standard way. So Oracle is involved in this, and VBN will be updating our triple store to be able to handle this. And the idea is that you can use whatever ontology you want to represent your data, but if you use these properties and classes to represent the spatial parts of what you're doing, then you should be able to ask those good types of spatial queries, like borrowing from before, what are the schools in Ohio, and in a standard way for the spatial portions. And now, as promised, going quickly through a lot of technical detail. We have spatial objects, features, and geometries, and those really mean the exact same things that you're used to. So but they're lifted up to be RDFs, F or OWL classes. And we're going to store the primary coordinates in geometry literals, hopefully in multiple forms, GML and well-known text and others to be determined. I'm going to skip some of this stuff for now. Please talk to me about it. There are a complicated set of reasons why it's good to put some of that data in a big, long literal. I'd love to talk to you about it, but I don't have too much time here. We also wanted to give object properties to use to compare objects, and this is where some of the reasoning comes into play. We want to provide the normal spatial relations here to use between the geometries so that systems that may not be working with explicit geometry coordinates can still do some level of reasoning about this and use the same terminology. And that's what this next slide discusses. There's some example data here to show you what some of these things would look like. And we also wanted to have the filter functions there, and some of these are a little bit lengthy, which is a good reason to have some of the simple reasoning predicates there as well. But this gives you really the full power of the comparisons that you would be doing with simple features, which a lot of this stuff is based on. And there's some example queries here, and these basically look like using the classes and properties that have been previously mentioned with the filter functions in a normal Sparkle query that could be parsed by any Sparkle processor. Finally, in order to lift things yet one level higher, we want to be able to have spatial relations between features, and this is precipitated through the use of a primary geometry. So if you declare something to have a primary geometry, a feature type to have a primary geometry, then you can talk very abstractly about whether, say, the school is within a state at the feature level, and this is facilitated by these query rewrite rules that take a query that includes those type of feature-featured relationships and then rewrites them as relationships that are between the geometries that are underlying. So In summary, this is work that's based very heavily on simple features. It's a small RDF-OWL vocabulary. We're trying to keep this as tight and easy to use as possible because we want this to be adopted not just by people who are already extremely familiar with geospatial data, but we'd like this to become the de facto way for geospatial data to be represented on the semantic web. And so we need it to be pretty understandable. We're really hoping that this is the seed within the OGC to get some progress made on semantic web related standards that are geospatial. So from here we may be going to a more explicit definition of geometries and the types of literals that can be presented, and then specific domain ontologies expressed in RDF as well. And we'll hold questions for the end. And with that, I'll let Luis come up and finish off this session.
Good morning. My name is Luis Bermudez. So how many of you know about OGC? Raise your hand. Oh, okay. So maybe I will speak, I will go very fast on the first slide. So as we know, we have a lot of nodes, and not billions, but I mean, a lot of nodes, even within mobile devices, and those nodes do not understand each other. And the problem is here, for example, even to try to describe a well, we use different vocabularies and we use different models that have that can be encoded in different ways. And the protocols are also very different. Sometimes we use HTTP URIs. Sometimes we just use methods to invoke machine to machine. And it's very costly not to be interoperable. So we have the left side is, doesn't matter. You just publish your data, your models in any way, or why don't we use common standards here? The interoperable saves a lot of money, so there was this study. And there's a lot of reports about why do we need to do this kind of work. Google, for example, OGC KML, if you don't know KML, it's an OGC standard. And the good thing is open. So if you are an OGC member, you can participate in the working group and then vote if you want to have new features, etc. So we are a global forum, and I'm talking about all this because I want to give you the overview of OGC and how semantics work within OGC. So we are a global forum, and we lead the development and promotion and harmonization of open and freely available geospatial standards. We have over 400 member organizations. We have most of our members are commercial members, but we have government, we have academia. Most of our members are from Europe, believe it or not, and U.S., part of Asia, a little bit of other countries. And become a member is very important for you if you are not. We have alliance partners with other standard working groups. And we publish about 30 or more standards. For example, SensorML, CTGML, KML, data services, which are interfaces to get data, catalog services, processing services. And we have a lot of implementing products that you can go to the web and see if a software is implementing it has been certified with an OGC standard. Now, there is a difference between other standard organizations and OGC. We really want to work on the standards and see and test them to see if they work or not. And that's why we have the interoperability program development, most of about 40 initiatives. So we have test beds, interoperability experiments, pilots, and fluxes where we test and improve the standards and we provide the feedback necessary for the specification program to make the standards work. Now, so I'm going to highlight a lot of some of the OGC semantic work. ODC has not really focused on geosemantics. Recently, a lot of work has been happening. It's not easy, not perfect, and this is a slide from Carl Reed. So it's very hard to have 100%, let's say, mapping of UML models to OWL. But we just need to focus on what is really what we want to do, and if we are able to answer some queries such as give me the schools nearby, something, when weather is that. So for the first 3 years, ODC focused on what was a coordinate. It was very simple semantics. What is a point? What is a feature? And there are abstract models, GML, et cetera, that discusses and provides that information. But what we want to do is to see how we provide the interaction with domain community models and the process of ODC and the specifications that we already have. For example, there are working groups such as, or groups, communities such as GeoSIML and CDGML, where they have their own domain models, and sometimes they reuse ODC standards such as WFS, and then they provide consensus about the model, and then we need to approve about what is the encoding and how we are sharing that model. In one case, they work on their own domain models and they bring it to ODC, for example, hydrology, WaterML. In other case, they extend, they create their own feature profiles such as GeoSIML, and then they take it to another organization such as this one, the Commission for the Management and Application of Geoscience Information. There is a geosemantics domain working group which Josh chairs. So there are presentations at every PC meeting. The last presentation was done this week at Sydney, and this is quite a talk. So John Henry presented GeoSparkQL. There was also a presentation about, this was looking about the semantic sensor, the SSN ontology work that Amit presented, and also presentation about linking data exchange standards into the linked open data web. So you can see how the members of ODC are going, and they're very much in tune with what is happening outside ODC, in particular with W3C technologies. At ODC, there is a group called the ODC Naming Authority. It was created in 2008, and this is very important related to semantics, because that everything that is at ODC now, meaning documents, schemas, classes, reference system, everything is uniquely identified with a URI. And there is a process at ODC where those unique identifiers are validated. There is a registry where you can look at what are the different types, name, et cetera. For example, conformant classes have the unique identification. This is important because then you can encode in RDF and create these semantic mashups. This is another example. Even if we have URNs, we have resolvers that connect, for example, in this case, to the EPSG registry. So ODC has these interoperability program activities on one of that is GEOS, and in the latest GEOS architecture implementation pilot project, which reports are available on the web, there was a semantics thread, and in that semantics thread there were a couple things such as there was a use of a dictionary service and also an ArrowGeoS broker that was using the URIs that I showed previously to tag resources so they can be discoverable. For example, let's say I need an ODC web map service. How do I do it? Well, there is a unique identifier that you can put in a catalog, that you can associate a service with it, et cetera, et cetera. Also, there have been some work related to semantics in the sense of web enablement. One was one activity that I was very involved with a couple of years ago. So we had the Ocean Science Interoperability Experiment, where we do sensor observation services, and we had domain ontologies, and with those domain ontologies, we tagged the services. And even if we were using different ontologies, for example, we were able to categorize, give me all the seawater temperature of those sensors. And as you can see, these anthologies were created basically from directly from the data sources. We had our presentation in RDF, and we were able to create mappings and be able to categorize different sensor data. And also the W3C working group, which is working on the semantic sensor network. And I like this slide very much. This was presented at the ODCTC meeting this week, where you can see, well, we have sources of data, such as in this case sensors, and we use ODC interfaces, sensor observation services, to share data. We have models like SensorML and observation and measurement. And then we build on top of it semantic representation of those models. And then we are able to create mashup services. So I think this is very nice. It shows, well, ODC already has some interfaces that we can build on top of it. There was a geospatial semantic web interactivity experiment. I think also Josh was very involved with it. For example, there was some initial representations of GML and ontology, and also different information models such as this one, such, well, if you have a service and you have data sets that use metadata, then how do you tag those data sets with ontologies? And I think this is this is used by the catalog model. And now the last one is there is an OWS ODC Web Services Testbed 8 that is about to start. There's already an RFQ available, and there's going to be a threat, which is called cross-community interoperability. We want to advance semantic mediation approaches to query and use data based on different heterogeneous data models, which are available via ODC Web Feature Services. This is the engineering viewpoint that we have here. So there's going to be an ODC mediation component, right, which talks to a catalog where different data services, such as WFS, are going to be registered. And then this ODC mediation service not only is going to discover those services in the catalog, but it's also going to translate and even is going to discover styles that are available for a particular feature type. It's a very advanced concept. But if you are more interested, you can read the RFQ. GeoSparkL, we already had a nice talk about that. And then last announcement, there is an ODC meeting here in the U.S. in September, so don't miss it. And that's all. Thank you.
Okay, we're running a little bit behind schedule. I guess that's pretty much typical. But if there are any questions for any one of the four speakers, take maybe one or two now, and then you can also ask questions of them individually during the break. So does anybody have a question they want to ask at this point? You ready for a biological break? 5 o'clock up there, it looks like, is it 5 of? Or is it 10 of 11? 10 of 11. Okay, can we be back at 10 after? Take 20 minutes for a break. The restrooms, as I said before, are right behind us. You go out these doors. Side men room on this side. The cafeteria is closed right now. There's a snack bar down the hall just beyond the windows, and it's on the right-hand side. So Todd, see Dahlia, and everyone else. Do some networking, take a break, and see you back in 20 minutes.